Hi, this is Father Bill W. I'm an Episcopal priest here in Austin, Texas, and welcome once again to the podcast. If you haven't done so already, I would encourage you to go visit our website. It's called Two Way Prayer, and it teaches a form of prayer and meditation that they used to do in early AA and in the Oxford group, and somehow it got lost. And I just think, Wilson said AA lost something large when we stopped doing this practice. So I encourage you to go and visit it. Also be aware we're going to be doing some workshops in August and September on two-way prayer. We're doing Zoom workshops. They're on Wednesday morning. And if you'd write me at twowayprayer@gmail.com, happy to send you a flyer on that. So again, welcome to the series. This is a series we're doing on Bill Wilson. Not so much interested in, giving you a thorough biography as I am in exploring some of the deeper changes that were going on inside of Bill. So we're calling this Bill W. from the inside out. And in the first episode, we looked at the pain that he experienced growing up as a child in Vermont. Abandoned by his father, then abandoned by his mother shortly thereafter, takes his sister and leaves him to grow up with his grandparents. Shortly thereafter, in high school, he loses the love of his life. Girlfriend goes for surgery in New York City and never comes back, so dies on the operating table. Bill describes himself as, someone who really didn't mix. He was a real loner. And then he discovered this part of himself that was really driven to become number one. Got to be the best at everything. Can't really form partnerships. Everybody's in competition with him. Not a very good state. And then, of course, he discovers alcohol and it becomes his friend. And then the second episode, we looked at his rise up the ladder, how he was chasing money and chasing women and fame and glory and all that sort of stuff. And alcohol really begins to take him down. Most people are aware, if you studied the Big Book at all seriously, about Bill Wilson's white light experience in Towns Hospital. It's kind of the highlight of his story, his transformation, and it's really important. And we're going to get to that in the next episode. But after he had that white light experience, he was given a book called Varieties of Religious Experience by William James, famous as being the father of American psychology. And Wilson was trying to understand what had happened to him, how he had prayed for God in desperation, and then he had this sudden, dramatic mountaintop experience, white flash, goes by a number of different names. But he read that book by William James, trying to understand what the experience was. And like I say, we'll get into this experience in the next episode. But as a prelude here, I want to just kind of talk about what a spiritual experience is via James and in Wilson's language. And then we're going to look at four experiences that Wilson identifies as having happened to him before he had the white light. And most of these are not very well known. So I think you may be in for a treat in understanding Wilson's psyche maybe a little bit better than before. So here's the way Wilson explains James. He says... The book is, of course, is about a number of religious experiences that people have had throughout history, and James analyzes them. and a couple of the people are drunks. So this is probably Wilson's first real analysis. He says there was a common denominator to all of these stories. And I'll pick up here in Wilson's words. The first common denominator was calamity. Nearly every recipient described had met utter defeat in some controlling area of his life. Every resource of courage, understanding, and will had failed. Each had beaten despair upon a wall and had seen no way over, under, or around. This was an essential condition of the experience to follow. It's like Wilson trying to get sober, just couldn't do it. The next condition was the admission from the very depths of being that defeat was utter and absolute. Each individual had to concede that he simply couldn't go on living upon his own steam. His life had become unmanageable. And the third condition was an appeal to a higher power for help. This appeal could take innumerable forms. It might be accompanied by a faith in God, or it might not. The cry for help could course through religious channels, or a despairing agnostic could look at a growing tree and reflect how the tree could respond to the law of its own nature, and he, the human, could not. He might raise his voice to the God of nature. Then the transforming experience would set in, sometimes like a thundercloud, as with St. Paul on the road to Damascus, or very gradually following repeated appeals. The individual would slowly grow into a new state of consciousness and release. So it's this finding of a new state of consciousness that Wilson believes and that Carl Jung believed was going to be necessary to affect the transformation of the mind at the deepest levels to bring about recovery from alcoholism. So with this knowledge, and now we're reading from a book, it's actually tape recordings that Wilson made in preparation for a book. And he's recalling now, not only did he have this spiritual experience at Towns Hospital, but as he reflected back on his life, there were other periods wherein he underwent a spiritual experience. So that's what we're gonna look at. Okay? And so the first one is on Newport Beach. And just to set the scene, Wilson he's in the army and he's getting ready to be shipped overseas. And there's a real conflict going on inside of him. He's scared to death of dying. And he wants to be brave. And he's going back and forth and back and forth. And it's really driving him crazy. He wants to run and he wants to fight. All at the same time. So that's the scene. He's there with Lois and something happens. So let him describe it. He says, finally, the dreaded day arrived when he was going to ship out. I remember going with an officer called McConnell and his wife, the four of us, to someplace down on the shore for lobster. I remember the tremendous pall of gloom that settled over three of us, all save Lois, who bore up. Then I remember getting a terrible aversion to that mood of pessimism and thought how very selfish and self-concerned all this is. And afterward, Lois and I got away from them. And at sunset time, we stood on one of the beautiful cliffs at Newport, overlooking the sea. It was a part of the shoreline where we were utterly alone. She and I, looking out over the ocean, wondering. The sun was just setting. And as the minutes passed, our gloom was superseded by a growing feeling of duty and patriotism. And we talked about those things. And then it turned into an exaltation that I now realize amounted to a genuine spiritual experience. In other words, we found exaltation in the joy of sacrifice. We were given the strength and the joy to go on in the face of utter perilousness over the circumstances. That was the first outline and trace of the spiritual experience mechanism as it evolved in me over the years. I never shall forget that experience. It was very triumphant. So the conflict that's been raging in him for some time, the divided mind, the divided person, somehow there's a surrender to it and a feeling of exaltation, a feeling that it's going to be all right. No matter how bad things are in this world, in God's world, they are all right. This was the break-in of that sense, I think, within his soul. The next experience that he reports, his second one, is when he is on a troop carrier. So now he's being shipped overseas. He's going into World War I. He's facing death. I'm sure the fear had returned. And here's a second experience of finding access to a strength that really perhaps wasn't fully his own. Here's how he describes it. We had moved up almost in sight of Iceland, and it got terribly cold. And then finally, we took our turn to the southeast and entered the Irish Sea, which at the time was absolutely infested with German submarines. At this time, we had to set most rigorous watches. Stairwells had been built down the hatches of the Lancashire, and there were openings from the stairway into one deck after another, and those decks were just packed solid with bunks. So they put an officer at each landing on the stairway in the hatch opposite each deck filled with bunks so that if during the night we were hit, we'd be there to handle things and stop any panic. And I had an early morning watch on the night the Lancashire came into the Irish Sea. I sat practically on the keel of the vessel, and I could look up the stairway, and through the hatch I could see daylight just coming. I couldn't help but reflect that I was the man lowest down, and I was musing away when suddenly there was an ear-shattering crash. It was utterly shattering, and the ship trembled and shook, and I thought to myself, this is it. Then a rush from the bunks started, sleeping men making for the hatchways, and I found I had to offer to shoot them to stop it. And the minute I drew my gun and quieted those people down, although we all thought our number was up and not a chance, another tremendous spiritual experience, this wave of complete confidence and exaltation, the feeling, well, you aren't yellow after all. Conflicted with wanting to be a patriot, wanting to follow after the Green Mountain Boys from Vermont, stories that he had grown up with, and as a human being who hasn't even lived yet, he's scared to death. And there's the conflict. And when he was able to meet the challenge of the moment and do what he needed to do to assume control, but in a good way, in a healthy way, in the right way, he felt whole. And that sense of wholeness is, I believe, what's really at the core of this spiritual experience. It's not God poking his finger out of heaven and touching me. It's me waking up and rising to the occasion and being who I was meant to be at that moment. And when I am doing that at that moment, I am in touch with powers beyond myself, and I'm in touch with them rightly in terms of I am in service to them. All right, I want you to see, he's saying these are the things that are starting to happen to me. They're starting to break into my life when I look back on it. It wasn't just in Towns Hospital. Things had been happening to me before that. So we got two more. And this is the famous one. It's in the book. It's not that famous, really. It is in the book, and I don't know that it's terribly well understood, but it's the Winchester Cathedral story that Bill tells about when he's talking about his life story. And his version of it goes like this. In Winchester, town in England, there came another illuminating experience. We were, of course, permitted to sightsee in town. And one of the very first places I visited was old Winchester Cathedral. Before going in, I remember wandering in the graveyard and came across a headstone of someone called Thomas Thatcher, perhaps an ancestor of my good friend Ebbie Thatcher. And I remember what a smile I got out of the epitaph. Perhaps I saw it coming out of the cathedral. I guess I did think of it coming out. At any rate, here's the epitaph, he says. Here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught his death drinking cold small beer. A good soldier is ne'er forgot, whether he dies by musket or by pot. At any rate, Wilson continues, I walked inside the cathedral, and there was a company of soldiers there, some of them pretty tough-looking specimens, and all were very much subdued by the atmosphere of that place. I had been in many cathedrals since, and have never experienced anything like it. Returning there in 1950, I went through a similar experience. There was, within those walls, a tremendous sense of presence. I remember standing there, and again, the spiritual experience repeated itself. I thought of France. I thought of wounds. I thought of suffering. I thought of death, even of oblivion. And then my mood veered sharply about as the atmosphere of that place began to possess me, and I was lifted up into a sort of ecstasy. And though I was not a conscious believer in God at that time, I had no defined belief, yet I somehow had a mighty assurance that things were and would be all right. That was very much like the experience at Newport, very much like it, except this time the notion of the supernatural and the notion of God kept crossing my mind, and the sense of some sort of sustaining presence in that place was quite overpowering. I didn't define it, but it was a valid spiritual experience, and it had the classic mechanisms: collapsed human powerlessness, then God coming to man to lift him up, to set him on the high road to his destiny. Those were my impressions of my experience in the cathedral. So upon reflection, Wilson is saying, there were these times, they were times of conflict, they were times when I couldn't measure up, when I was facing something that I couldn't get over, under, or around, but had to go through. And it was in that going through it that I experienced something. And I think it's straight out of William James, and it's an experience that I think many alcoholics and addicts can relate to, that may not be in Winchester Cathedral. I'll never forget one guy, he came to in an Exxon bathroom, and he looked in the mirror and he didn't know who the hell it was who was looking back at him. And it just blew his mind. And there was that collapse. And then there was that calling out, God, if there is a God, please help me. And then he's restored to sanity. So those are the three ones kind of centered around the wartime experience. And isn't it interesting, you know, they said that the people in early in AA who went off to World War II actually did better in terms of staying sober than the ones who stayed home. It's just something about war and tragedy and problems that that bring us into the waiting room for God. Let me put it like that. It make me ready for that experience because I'm feeling so hopeless, and that's when hope breaks through. The last one is one that is one of my favorites, and this is the mission story. And to kind of set this up, what's happening is everybody knows about the visit that Ebby Thatcher has with Bill. He's Ebby's in the Oxford group. He's 60 days sober. He's supposed to work with somebody and help bring him to God, and in a subtle way. And he makes a call on Bill Wilson, his old drinking buddy. These were high school drinking buddies. Later, had some episodes together. And he makes the call on Bill, tells him that he's gotten sober. And he did it through religion, but, you know, it wasn't the normal kind of religion. And something happened to Bill during that conversation that again, he's feeling hopeless. He's been detoxed three times. He's failed every time he's come out. The doctor has declared him hopeless. Lois has been told, get ready, because this guy is not going to make it. You need to start looking out for yourself. And Ebby brings a little bit of light into that deep, deep darkness. So here is... most people think Ebby went, you know, not, excuse me, that Bill Wilson went pretty much from there to Towns Hospital. He did not. He had this experience at the mission. And why they didn't put this in the big book, I don't know, but it's really beautiful and really helps explain what happens to him later. So let me shut up and read from Wilson and see what's going on with him. So he says, pretty maudlin one day, I got a great idea. I figured it was time I'd go investigation on my own hook. I'd go do some investigation on my own hook, remembering the mission where Ebby stayed. I figured I'd go and see what they did there. Anyway, I'd find out. I left the subway at 4th Avenue and 23rd Street. It was a good long walk across 23rd, so I began stopping in bars. This consumed most of the afternoon, and I forgot all about the mission. At nightfall, I found myself in an excited conversation with a Finn named Alec. He said he'd been a sailmaker in the old country and a fisherman, too. Somehow that word fisherman clicked. I thought again of the mission. Over there, I would find fishers of men. It seemed like a wonderful idea. I put persuasion on Alec. And soon we reeled in the front door. Tex Francisco, an ex-drunk in charge, was right there to meet us. He not only ran the mission, he proposed to run us out of it. This made us very sore when we thought of our good intentions. Just then Ebby turned up, grinning like a Cheshire cat. He said, what about a plate of beans? After the beans, Alex and I were both clearer. Ebby said that there would be a meeting in the mission pretty soon. Would we like to come? Sure we'd go. That's why we were there. The three of us were soon sitting on one of the hard wooden benches that filled the place. I shivered a little as I looked at the derelict audience. I could smell sweat and alcohol. What the suffering was, I pretty well knew. There were hymns and prayers. Tex, the leader, exhorted us. Only Jesus could save, he said. Certain men got up and made testimonials. Numb as I was, I felt interest and excitement rising. Then came the call, the altar call. Penitents started marching forward to the rail. Unaccountably impelled, I started too, dragging Alec with me. Ebby reached for my coattails, but it was too late. Soon I knelt among the sweating, stinking penitents. Maybe then and there, for the very first time, I was penitent too. Something touched me. I guess it was more than that. I was hit. I felt a wild impulse to talk. Jumping to my feet, I began. Afterward, I could never remember what I said. I only know that I was in earnest, and people seemed to pay attention. Afterward, Ebby, who had been scared to death, told me what, with relief, that I had done all right and had given my life to God. So there's Wilson. He's drunk. He's at the Oxford Group Mission in downtown New York. Ebby is there with him, and he makes an altar call. And the line that I love is about the penitents. So there he is. Soon I knelt among the sweating, stinking penitents. Maybe then and there, for the very first time, I was penitent too. See, there are blockages to God. I don't know that it's much so much discovering God as uncovering the God who is already there. And nothing blocks that more than pride. And the thing that opens the door is what? It's humility. It's teachability. It's saying, I can't do this. And that is what opens one, William James believed, to this experience. It, you know, it's when things get really dark is when I'm able to see the light. The darker they get, the more able I am to see that light. And this is the really the heart and the soul of the spiritual experience that is so vital, I believe, to alcoholics and addicts finding their way to recovery. And the reason is because you can't deny your experiences. These are four that that Wilson lays out. And as he's looking back on his life, he's seeing the preparation for, you know, the great white light experience. And we'll talk about that next time. But it's something that I think if we will begin to reflect on our lives, we will see an opening to that other world offering itself to us many, many times during the course of our journeys. So next time, I want to really dig into Wilson's experience in Towns Hospital, what was going on there, what happened to him, what role William James played in all of that, and how he felt that that experience was something that he could never deny, and it totally changed his life. So look forward to that one. Thank you for listening to this one. Hope you found some of these stories of interest. I did. And again, hope you'll visit our website, Two Way Prayer. And if you're able to, drop me a line and I'll send you a flyer for the upcoming workshop. We're doing two in August and then two again in September. It's going to be Wednesdays at 10 o'clock Central Time. So the address for that, twowayprayer@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. God bless. Keep coming back.